How come wheat is an issue? Like, I had done anthropology. I went to the University of Colorado. I had the most amazing anthropology and culture and tradition guy that taught me. I loved the course so much so that's why I did nutrition, because I realized that it was food that helped us survive and adaptation to an environment. And so I went, well, wheat's been a part of our heritage and grain has been a part of our heritage. What's wrong with it? And so I went on a bit of a education curve and realized that there's been a cascade of events that have happened to wheat, and what that has done is it destroyed our ability to digest the gluten. It's destroyed our ability to be healthy if we don't take heed to what has happened to it.
You're listening to Food Integrity Now with your host, Carol Gervais.
Hello and welcome to Food Integrity Now. I'm Carol Gervais. I am a certified holistic nutritionist and the host of the show. At Food Integrity Now, we like to investigate and explore what's happening in our food supply so that you can make wise decisions for your health and for your family's health. And I'd like to give a big shout out to Ben Sound Music for our intro and outro music.
Hi, it's Carol Gervais, and I am a certified holistic nutritionist, a life coach, and the host of Food Integrity Now. What you eat and how you eat can greatly affect the way you look and feel, and whether or not you get sick. If your immune system is compromised, you might have brain fog, allergies, low energy, depression, have trouble sleeping, you might be overweight, perhaps you get frequent colds, or worse, have a disease. A poor diet can lead to diabetes, cancer, Alzheimer's, and virtually all other diseases. I take great pride in working with individuals and groups and seeing how they create such positive changes in their lives. I offer one-on-one coaching packages, or we can design a package just for your group. To find out more, go to foodintegritycoaching.com or call me at 415-302-7100 for your free consultation. I offer phone and Skype sessions, and this really is all about quality of life. Let me assist you to have the best quality ever.
My guest today is Cindy O'Meara. Cindy is a nutritionist, best-selling author, international speaker, and founder of Changing Habits. Her groundbreaking book, Changing Habits, Changing Lives, became an instant bestseller, and from there she has grown a successful organic food company, certified online education program, and a groundbreaking documentary. Cindy is all about education. Her greatest love is to teach people in order for them to make better choices in their lives. Today we're going to be talking with Cindy about her new documentary, What's with Wheat? Cindy, welcome to Food Integrity Now.
Thank you, Carol.
I'm really excited to have you on the show today, and you are the executive producer of the new documentary, What's with Wheat? And before we discuss the film, can you let our listeners know a little bit more about you, some more of your background?
Yeah, sure. I guess you could say I'm from a family that has died young. So my mother was the oldest of 11. Seven of them were boys. Six of them had the gene for hemophilia. And, you know, that was the beginning of hemophilia in our family lineage. We'd never seen it before. They were from Iowa, USA. And when I look back, you know, it's all very easy in hindsight to look back. But when I look back, my mum was born in 1937 and she does not have the gene for hemophilia. But her sisters, not all of them, but most of them have the gene for hemophilia. I look back at what was happening around that time, and it was the beginning of chemicals being sprayed on the cornfields, and my grandfather was a corn farmer. Yeah, like arsenic and lead were being sprayed. By 1938, there was a locust plague. Then in the 40s, it was the beginning of DDT and other chemicals that you know, Rachel Carson in her book Silent Spring talked about how dangerous they were to the environment and our animals and therefore humans. And my mum died early of mesothelioma. She passed away at 69. My sister was also born in Iowa, USA. She passed away at 46 from an autoimmune disease. My aunts had breast cancer. It's just been a debacle, and there are only three of them left from 13. You know, fair enough.
Wow.
Grandpa would have died by now, but not like my mum would have only been hitting 80 now, and all her siblings were under her, the youngest being my age, which is in my 50s, and he's also gone. So I looked at that and I thought, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do everything I can in my power to turn off those genes and turn on the genes for health. And so I've always eaten well, done everything from scratch, became a nutritionist in my early 20s, stayed away from chemicals, did everything I could possibly do to stay healthy. And then I reached the age of like 48, 49, and I started to put on weight. I got a sore back, sore hip, anxiety. And I'm thinking, I'm eating the same food I've always eaten. I'm doing everything organic. I make all my own breads from scratch. Everything is done in my kitchen, you know, nutrition to the max. And so I thought, well, there's something I'm eating. Obviously, it's got to be something I'm eating. And so what I did was I went in on a very strict elimination protocol where all I ate was very small amounts of lean meat, such as like lamb or beef or fowl or fish, and lots of greenery, and only winter fruits. But I only ate three winter fruits each day. And in 3 weeks, I lost 9 kilos, which in you know, double that for pounds. So 18 plus pounds. I lost all my aches, pains, anxiety, everything. My clarity of mind was unbelievable. I felt like I was connected to this amazing universal force. And my girlfriend, when I was trying to explain it to her, said to me, Cindy, you sound like you're doing drugs. I said, no, this is just something I've never experienced in my life before. And then I started to reintroduce foods back into my diet. And as soon as I introduced wheat, weight gain, 700 grams overnight, which would have been I can't convert, but that would be double in pounds. My mind started to get foggy, and this was just in a 24-hour period. So that was, you know, 5-6 years ago now, and I started to go, well, how come wheat is an issue? Like, I had done anthropology. I went to the University of Colorado. I had the most amazing anthropology and culture and tradition guy that taught me. I loved the course so much so that's why I did nutrition, because I realized that it was food that helped us survive and adaptation to an environment. And so I went, well, wheat's been a part of our heritage and grain has been a part of our heritage. What's wrong with it? And so I went on a bit of a education curve and realized that there has been a cascade of events that have happened to wheat, and what that has done is it's destroyed our ability to digest the gluten. It's destroyed our ability to be healthy if we don't take heed to what has happened to it. And I kept thinking, oh, no, I'll be able to eat wheat again. I'll be able to eat wheat again. But I realized I can't eat the modern wheat. I can on occasion eat the traditional wheats. Mm-hmm. And so that's what led me to, well, why don't I tell everybody else what I've learned? And I've written many books, and I thought, rather than a book, let's do a documentary. And so the documentary What's With Wheat was conceived. And 2 years ago, I wrote the story and decided how I wanted it to be. And then I decided on all the people I wanted in it that had, you know, through their research, I had learned so much. And on Christmas Eve, not last Christmas, but the Christmas before, I sent a video to them, explained my story as I'm doing right now, and said, I want to tell this story. And in 24 hours, I had three key women say yes to me. Vandina Shiva, Dr. Natasha Campbell-McBride and Dr. Terry Walls all said yes to me. And then it was just a cascade of everybody else saying yes. So I only had a couple of no's and a couple not answer me. And that's okay. That's just the way it is. But I've had unbelievable reviews about the documentary of you've answered many questions. I never thought that maybe it was a food that was causing my problems. So it's been an amazing learning curve for me, not only in understanding what's done to our wheat, but also in the making of a documentary and the amazing people that I've met along the road.
Wonderful. And my next question was going to be, what motivated you to do the film? And you just answered that for us. So I do have a question. You live in Australia. And
yes.
Do you think there's a difference in the quality of the wheat there? Is it different than the American wheat?
No, you're using Triticum estivum, which was conceived by a type of hybridization in the 1970s by a gentleman by the name of Norman Borlaug. So the American wheat and the Australian wheat is very similar, but there are different varieties of that. So we have a very dry climate, and especially where some of our wheat is grown, and they may have one that is hunts the roots go a little bit deeper to look for water. So there are different varieties to Triticum estivum. And it all depends on the environment that you're in. But we also have wet areas where we also grow wheat. So we have very many climates in Australia. Like we have the cold mountain regions, we have the tropics, the subtropics, we have the Mallee region where it's dry, and that's where the wheat used to grow. But now we have all these varieties that will grow in every single one of these in one of these environments. In actual fact, where I live, which is in the subtropics, you go to the what they call the hinterland region, and there's wheat being grown up there. So your environments change as well. You'll have dry environments and wet environments. The one thing what happens in Australia is that the chemicals that are being used are similar to the ones that are being used in the US.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things I do know in the US is that glyphosate or Roundup
right.
is used as a desiccant on your wheat and many of your wheat fields, whereas in Australia, they are only used as a desiccant on our wet area wheat fields, not the dry area wheat fields. So, you know, and no doubt there'll be other chemicals are being sprayed that you may not be using. So as far as the quality of the wheat and the chemicals that are being sprayed on it, I actually don't think there's much of a difference. I believe that we are destroying the wheat. We've destroyed the land. And whether we spray glyphosate before we, pre-seeding, or whether we do it before harvest, that glyphosate has the ability to stay in the soil for up to 20 years. And if it's in the soil, then it's destroying the microbiology of the soil, which means that the plant cannot take up the minerals that it needs. Therefore, it's an unhealthy plant. And if it's unhealthy, pests, you know, will prey on it more. And then we'll spray it for the pests, and then we harvest it, and then it goes into many of our foods that then is not nutritious. You know, they're all the, you know, I hear dietitians saying, oh, you shouldn't be giving up wheat because it's full of all these vitamins and minerals. Well, I'm telling you that it's not these days, this new modern wheat. It's
right.
lost its ability to pull up those minerals. And it's the same in America and Australia and in some regions of England. But Europe, funny enough, has continued to grow its traditional wheats. And India used to, but now it grows modern wheat. So it really depends on the region who's growing what.
Yeah, I've heard people say, you know, they can't eat wheat here, but then they go on vacation in Europe and they eat the bread and they feel fine.
Yeah, that's so, because it's a very different variety. It's the old variety of einkorn or emmer wheat, which
yeah.
is, you know, einkorn's 23,000 years old, so we think, and emmer wheat is 17,000 years old, and einkorn is something called a monoploid, and emmer wheat is something called a diploid, whereas the Triticum estivum, which is modern wheat, is called a polyploid, so which often happens in plants, you know, one grass mixes with another grass, and it's not like us where we have the same amount of genetics. This changes. The plant species change.
And also, those ancient grains are not sprayed with glyphosate. I really think glyphosate's one of the biggest culprits. I really do, because it's so detrimental to our health, and it is so widespread. As you know, they're finding it everywhere in breast milk and in our food, you know, as you said, in the soil. And it just wreaks havoc on the gut and the endocrine system. And I think it is partially responsible for so many allergies that people have once it gets into the gut, because it's also a mineral chelator, and again, I think it's a huge factor.
I agree with you. Yeah. I agree with you entirely. And Dr. Stephanie Seneff out of MIT, mm-hmm. a senior researcher, she is like a dog with a bone. She is not going to let glyphosate rest until she sees what it does to the human body. And every day, she finds something else. Like, I have emails from her saying, oh my gosh, Cindy, look what we've now discovered about it. So I agree entirely with you, Carol. I think it's a major player.
Yeah, and I will say that I've interviewed Dr. Stephanie Seneff too, and she's fantastic. And her research is just ongoing, as well as SAMHSA's. You know, they kind of work together quite a bit. And, you know, they're just finding more and more. And it's crazy that we don't have this banned yet.
Yeah, and I just saw that England has given it more. They've just registered it to be used for, I think it's another 15 years.
And I saw that as well. And you know, I thought that was going to go the other way for a while, but the powers that be, there's a lot of money.
And you know what? I think it's about raising above this whole issue and becoming informed and educated and knowing where your food is being produced and how it's produced, and staying away from those places and becoming a little bit of an activist in your own community or even your own home, that you're not going to have glyphosate or Roundup in your yard, and talk to your neighbors. And I really feel that there's not, you know, unless we lobby and unless we have more power than these guys, there's not a lot one person can do to dent their overall sprawl of what they're doing. But one person tells another person, and collectively, I believe that we have the ability to make changes with our pockets.
I do too, Cindy. As a matter of fact, I was asked to speak at the March Against Monsanto rally last May in San Diego, and I said I would speak, but I really was not going to go there and just talk about the bad guys, because I think that we need to focus on solutions. And so I gave a speech, and I called it Each One, Teach One. Educate yourself, educate others, and that's how we're going to spread the word, because we've come to the point where we have to take our nutrition and our health into our own hands, and we need to do research. We need to be responsible. And then as we learn, we teach others.
Yep, I agree. And that's what you're doing. I know, like, I've looked up what you do, and you're one voice out there, you know, telling thousands of people. And that's what the documentary is all about, is, you know, let's share this information. Let's get it out. Don't, you know, keep it to yourself. Just say, hey, look, I'm having 10 people around. Why don't you come and watch this documentary, whether it's What's With Wheat or whether it's Hungry for Change or whether it's, you know, I was just watching a trailer to one just before we started. Let me see if I can. Man-made epidemic. You know, there are just so many of them out there at the moment. It just, it's amazing.
There are. Yeah. There's, you know, the internet and the documentaries have made it pretty easy for people to do research on their own. But there are still people, Cindy, that don't know. They think that
the whole gluten thing is bogus. I mean, I run across people like that all the time. They're like, oh, that is, you know, that's bogus. And they just, because they don't understand and they don't have the facts. And, you know, the gluten-free product industry is booming. Mm. And as you and I both know, some of those products are horrible.
Yeah, I read the ingredients and I like just go, what are they thinking? You know, yeah. We're trying to get people to understand where their food is coming from. And I'll read 50 ingredients and a lot of them will be additives, preservatives and flavorings. Most people don't even know what a flavor is. And it's when you look at Eric Schlosser's book, Fast Food Nation, he shows what's in an ingredient and there are, in a flavor. And there are 45 chemicals, including diacetyls and solvents and, all these synthetic things like vanillin. Oh my gosh, I just kind of think when I see that the integrity of the people that are even making these foods or their knowledge is not there. So I'm very much in the film we talk about, it's about going back into the kitchen, stop being seduced by these food manufacturers. But having said that, there are also some amazing food manufacturers out there. And what I find is that when I find one that's ethical and I'll figure out that they're ethical by the ingredients they use, how they, you know, do things, how they say things, and then I'll stick with that food manufacturer and trust them. And it's like my company, Changing Habits. Like, I've been going for 30-something years. I've been a nutritionist since 1984. And I've been quite vocal as a nutritionist in Australia for that long, writing for papers, very controversial columns. But people say to me, we've been following you for a long time. We know what you do. We know the research you do. So when you bring a product out, and I only bring single ingredient products out usually, I want to teach people to get back into the kitchen. So I bring, you know, foods that are called faucet foods, foods that are organic, sustainable, ethical, and you can trust them, because I only bring them in because I'm looking for them for my own pantry. And I think when you find these people in your own region and in your own areas, then you can start to trust them. And I know when I come to America, there were places that I would go to, but I've been even hearing stories about, and I don't want to say names, but I've been hearing stories about even them, and I read their ingredients now and I go, you've lost the plot. You've become, you know, someone who is just not sticking to the values. You're not sticking to the ideals of what real, organic, clean, whole, vitalistic foods are all about.
I agree with you, and you and I are very similar in that. You know, if I find a food that I love, you know, I do things like I call the company, I talk with people, you know, obviously I read ingredients, but I think it's just really important to know where your food comes from. I'm a holistic nutritionist, and one of the things that I tell my clients, first and foremost, when they say, I don't like to cook, I'm going to say, well, you need to learn. you know, you don't have to be a chef, but it's so important. Either you need to learn to cook or you need to be able to hire someone to cook for you. Because if you don't have that, you're going to be relegated to eating out, and those options are not great. So it's, you know, as we said, it's important to get back into the kitchen.
But I think, Carol, we've lost what I think education should be about. I don't know what's happening in the US, but in Australia, when I went to school in the 60s and 70s, I was taught to sew, I was taught to cook, I was taught to type. Yes, I did English, and I did math and Australian history, but now I look back at the Australian history I learned and I realized I was lied to.
Right.
That's a story. Oh, yeah.
Right.
Our Indigenous people. And I'm sure the American, you know, the whole thing that really happened with the Indigenous people of the US, I'm sure that you know, there's just this lying that they do to placate the people as to what really did happen to our Indigenous groups. So I was taught all those, so I have the skills to do that. And I believe in, like, I look at my children, they never learnt these skills. They had to learn them from me. They didn't learn them in school. So they learnt how to cook, they learned how to be in the kitchen, we learnt, you know, all of that because I was interested in it. But what about the generations that you're now talking about that don't know how to cook? And you're right, they have to get back in the kitchen and stop being seduced by these fast food places and these food manufacturers that go, oh, just throw it in the microwave and there's your meal.
Yeah, I always ask that question. When did we think it was a good idea that fast and cheap was good? It's just not. So what are your thoughts on eating grains in general? I mean, like gluten-free grains. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I eat them because I don't feel I have an issue with them. Mm-hmm. But there are some people who cannot eat them.
Yeah.
And therefore, you should not be eating them. But I think one of the things that we've lost is the culture and the traditions of how we prepare them. And if I can give you an example of our Australian culture and tradition, not the white man culture and tradition, but the Australian Aboriginal. So there's always the belief that the Australian Aboriginal was a hunter-gatherer. But there's a new book out called Dark Emu by a gentleman by the name of Bruce Pascoe. And he went through all the explorers' like journals, and all of them spoke about fields and fields of grain and fields of you know, yams and thousands of Aboriginals being in one place. So they were actually not hunter-gatherers. They were actually agriculturalists, but the most peaceful of agriculturalists and fishermen. And they went on walkabout, yes, but they always came back to, you know, their grain. So he talks about that there was a millet, and there's a belief that this has been happening longer than it was happening in the Northern Hemisphere. So somewhere between 40,000 and 60,000 years ago that the Aboriginals have been agriculturalists and peaceful ones at that, like I said. So he believes there was a millet, an oat, but there was another one called nadu. There was also kangaroo grass, but there was this one called nadu.
How do you spell that?
N-A-R-D-O-O.
Okay, Nardu. Okay.
Nardu. And Nardu was a grain that had to be treated well. And it had to be soaked and ground and washed and cooked. And our explorers watched the Australian Aboriginals collecting this and believed that it was a good source of food for them. But little did they know that it also had anti-nutrients in it that would kill them if it wasn't prepared properly. And so two of our very famous explorers died from eating nadu. They died of a B1 deficiency or a vitamin B deficiency. So this is, you know, our culture and tradition has taught us to consume foods that may not have been good for us, but we figured out how to manipulate them by preparation in order to make them good for us. And with grain, you know, we're all trying to use it as flours. When in actual fact, I think they need to be prepared carefully by soaking, you know, the old traditions of soaking or fermenting, cooking, you know, all that preparation is necessary so that we can consume grain without it causing any digestive distresses. And then having said that, we were talking about glyphosate in the beginning. Mm-hmm. So glyphosate is killing the very, you know, the very essence of our body that helps us digest, utilize, immune system regulation, creation of vitamin K, creation of vitamin Bs. So I feel we're in this dilemma of, can we still eat the grain because we've destroyed our ability to do this by the destruction of the microbiome, or as we get our microbiome back, then we become more stronger and are we able to then, you know, eat that grain? So I think that to say straight out, no, we shouldn't be eating grain. I don't know if I agree with that, especially when you see the Australian Aboriginals lived like this for 40 to 60,000 years. And even Bruce Pascoe says it could have been longer that they were eating these well-prepared grains and surviving very well on the Australian continent.
Right. Well, I agree with you. And, you know, we're all individual, but what you were saying about our microbiome is so true. And I think, you know, that's step number one, heal your gut. And then maybe you can start introducing some of these grains that are prepared in a specific way and soaked and sprouted and fermented. Because I agree, some people can eat grains, some people can't. And it's definitely not a one-size-fits-all.
No, definitely not. Like, I've just been in Peru, and I was up in the, you know, the highland area, up in the Andes, and walking through villages. So I was on a very quiet, private trail, and I walked through villages and stayed in villages. And they were growing wheat, but the tall wheat. They were growing amaranth. I think it was quinoa. They grew quinoa. And they live on these foods, you know, as well as they've got the llamas, they've got cattle, you know, they have everything there for them. But grain is a part of their life, and it has been, you know, for quite some time. So to take that away from everybody, I think that many people would not do very well. So we're very lucky in a Western country where we have a plethora of food available to us. So we can live without grain. We do not have to have it. But, you know, it's always nice to be able to have that option if it's available to you and if you do it properly.
Let's go back to the film just for a few more moments. What would you say to our listeners, like the most important takeaway from the film?
Well, I think what we've been talking about is that we have to get back into the kitchen. We have to start preparing foods from scratch, because if we don't, then we don't know where our food is coming from, and then we don't know what it's doing to our body. And I like the whole thing finishes with me saying the story of wheat is a story of food. We just picked one food. You know, many people would give us criticism and say, why didn't you talk about this and why didn't you talk about that? Well, if I talked about everything, it would have been a 15-hour film, maybe longer. But we wanted to make it about one food, show people what's happening to it, and the most problematic food probably that we now see. But just wake people up to the reality of just because it's in our food and in the grocery store doesn't mean it's good for you and that you should eat it, that you should start to question the production of your food, that you should start to question the ingredients of your food. And when you start to do that, you realize that your only option is to enjoy time in your kitchen. And we have modern appliances, you know, beautiful ovens. I have a Thermomix. I don't know if you have these in the US, but... It's called a Thermomix. It's let me explain how it works. If I put an egg, some egg and some sugar and some milk in there, I can make custard in 6 minutes without touching anything. I press three buttons, one for heat, one for stirring, and one for time. So I press 6 minutes, 70 degrees, and I stir it at a speed that, you know, is not going to kill it, but is a slow speed, that so it's stirring it. Mm-hmm. So I don't need a double boiler. If I want to make, like I can make anything because it's got all these settings. And so when you have tools like these available to you, and you're a busy mom and you're working and you're a busy father and you're working and you've got kids to feed and you want to make foods from scratch, you can actually make cake mixes by just throwing everything in. And it prepares it for you, and it will cook it. So these things...
I'm going to have to look into that. I mean, we have a Vitamix, but I think that's maybe the more sophisticated ones do that. I don't know, but...
Yeah, it is a very sophisticated tool. It's out of Germany. It hit Australia 9 years ago. I was one of the first to get it, and In Australia now, I think they've sold around 200,000 of these kitchen appliances. So we have these tools. This is where I'm trying to get at. We've got the tools to do this. You've got ovens that you put a chicken in. You just say, it's a 1.5 kilo chicken. I want a crispy skin. Start. You know, and I want it ready for 6 o'clock at night. So it's about becoming organized. It's about becoming, you know, prepared in order to be able to come home and everything's ready for you or done. And I, you know what? I think people need help in that. And that's why we started the program. We have an online program to take people through those steps, to educate them about how bread's made and what the ingredients are and so on, and what's an alternative and what can I do. So, you know, we did the 6 week no wheat program to help people through this, because most people don't even know what to do anymore. Like you said, go and learn to cook.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of people will say to me when I say I eat a few grains, I don't eat wheat, I don't eat dairy, I don't eat sugar. They go, what do you eat? And I eat very well. I'm very fortunate too. I live in California where I can get fresh produce, organic produce, and I love to cook. So it's not a problem for me. But for many, it can be scary or intimidating, especially if they haven't cooked their whole lives. But it's not rocket science. And one of the tools I'm sure you have there too is a crock pot.
Yes.
And anybody can throw. I remember when I interviewed Joel Salatin, who's also in your film, he talked about the crock pot. He said, if you can throw something in the crock pot and just plug it in and you come home from work and you've got a meal.
Yep, and they're such a reasonable price. And you're right, you throw the meat, the veggies in,
yeah,
a little bit of stock. You walk away, go to work, come home, and you smell it the minute you walk in the house. And this is the thing, is that we've got the tools, and you know, it's like anything that you start to learn. It's a step by step process, and it is frustrating in the beginning, but then you become a master at it, and then you go, well, how come I never figured this out before? And I know in California there are cooking classes everywhere.
Yes.
And around the world there are cooking classes. Like, we've got I just got something dropped in my letterbox, and it was a girl that was calling herself the kitchen coach. And she would come into your kitchen and she'll coach you on how to do things. So, you know, one of the things that I do is that I go to the market. So I talk to my farmers. I want to know where my food's coming from. So I go to the market. I bring my produce home. I also have a veggie garden that I have all my herbs and all my lettuces and tomatoes and beetroot growing in. And then I come home and I make my pestos, my mayonnaises, my sauces. So I have all of the little condiments ready in my fridge for the week, so that, you know, if I decide to have salmon, I throw the pesto on the salmon and throw it in the oven. I'm not having to, you know, do those things. So it's about, like I said, organization, preparation. And you can do five, Monday to Friday, you can have five beautiful dinners. Your breakfast can be easy once you've figured out how this happens. And it is a step-by-step process on learning how to do this. And if someone is frustrated, it's like anything. It's when we learn for the first time, it is frustrating, and then it becomes second nature. And that's where we need to go back to, is that cooking is just the way our grandparents did it, or I remember, you know, or my mother even, you know. We didn't have grocery stores when we were growing up. My mum went to the local fruit and veggie shop, went to the local butcher, went to the local, we didn't have tinned foods, no packaged foods, everything. Mum didn't even have a pantry. Mm-hmm. You know, it was because we didn't have packets and packets of cereal and packets of Bickies and cookies. It was just flour, sugar, butter, all the spices, eggs, fruits, vegetables, and meats.
Yeah, we definitely need to head back in that direction, because what we're doing is not working. So thank you, Cindy, for being a guest on the show today. The film is What's With Wheat. And to find out more, you can go to whatswithwheat.com. Any other sites that you want to let our listeners know about, Cindy?
Well, whatswithweek.com will take you to the documentary and all the stuff about the documentary and all the extended highlights, etc. But my company is changinghabits.com.au, and there's lots of information, lots of blogs, lots of recipes, and people can see what we do internationally and nationally in Australia with education. So we have a 12-month education program. We have protocols and programs, you know, like people can go in and explore if that's where they would like to go. And there's Facebook, which is Changing Habits, and Instagram, which is Changing Habits, and What's With Wheat. So they'll find us.
Oh, great. Well, thank you again for being a guest all the way from Australia. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in today. Be well.